The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia. Visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
What's up, guys? This is the Talking the Star podcast. I'm your host, Connor Livesy, joined by a very special guest today is Seth Walter with ESPN Analytics is on the podcast to talk about the interesting case of the Dallas Cowboys and the analytics and metrics that we're going to go through today. I think are going to be very, very surprising and very interesting. So that's why I wanted to have him on, because I said this in the green room before we brought him on, but I think the Cowboys are one of the most interesting teams in the NFL right now because of the offensive and defensive results and metrics. So, Seth, welcome.
Thanks. Yeah, happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm a huge, huge fan of your work, so was excited to have you on. I mean, as big as analytics have gotten in the last like 4, 5, 6 years, you know, a lot of it can be very confusing. And one thing I appreciate with what you do and what you guys do over at ESPN's is that it's not hard to understand. There's some of this stuff where you're looking at a chart, you're trying to figure it out, but you guys dumb it down for the dummies like me that can get the gist of it, but also understand what I'm looking at.
Well, I appreciate that. That's really nice. That's what we try to do to some degree, not the dumbing down, but if it makes you feel better, like, you know, I'm the dumb person in our group, right? Like, you know, they have to dumb it down for me. And so we do try to make it as digestible as possible. You know, the goal is, I mean, we definitely sometimes get stuck in like esoteric in stuff in the weeds. And I do like that, but you know, ultimately, it's not going to get on SportsCenter if it's like crazy complicated and no one has any idea what the heck we're talking about.
And that's the cool thing I think you guys do, because it's just the casual football fan. I mean, you know this more than me, but like a lot of casual football fans hate analytics. You know, it's like the last thing they want to see. So if it's not what they want to see and then it's confusing to understand, it's just like it's very off-putting, but you make it to where it's like, oh, okay, I can understand how this means that and this means that. So that's one thing I appreciate, because I'm terrible with stuff like this, with charts and stuff. So I love being able to look at something and go, okay, I get what that means. And you guys do a fantastic job with that.
That's cool. Yeah. We're talking football ultimately. Right. Like at the end of the day, like that's what I think is like what makes it all work, is like ultimately we're just trying to talk about football.
Right.
And everybody right. likes that.
My first question for you, and this is not related to the Cowboys at all, but I'm curious for somebody who does this for a living, is what is the most controversial analytic, the, you know, metric, whatever it is. You know, some people will talk about coverage stuff or pass rush win rate or pass block. Like, what's the one that you get, like, people getting the most arguments about that goes, that makes no sense to me. Like, explain this to me more.
Ooh. Controversial. I'm trying to think what's like, you know, like which metric is like regularly controversial.
In Cowboys land, I'll tell you this. In Cowboys land, it's pass rush win rate. People think Marcus Lawrence is useless, and they always just go, I don't care about his pass rush win rate. How many sacks does he have? So in our universe, it's definitely that one.
I do think the win rates do cause some controversy, because they don't always line up with sacks, but and I think right. I think that's true on the defensive side of the ball and the offensive side of the ball, right? I think people think when a quarterback takes a lot of sacks that it's on the offensive line, which sometimes it is, but sometimes it's not. And so I do think that the misalignment sometimes with sacks does cause, some controversy, because people, the sacks is their starting point.
Right.
And I think what I always try and say is like, what if sacks isn't our starting point?
Right.
Like, you know, with Lawrence, I think it's interesting because he's been, that's like, I don't want to say throughout his career because long, but like throughout the existence of the win rates, Lawrence has consistently been a guy that has overperformed in pass rush win rate relative to his sack numbers. There are players like that, like Genevieve Clowney is one that comes to mind for me all the time, who has always had a good pass rush win rate, maybe outside of that year in Tennessee, and rarely puts up big sack numbers. I think it's like both things can be true. It doesn't, they're not necessarily in conflict with one another. With guys like Lawrence or Clowney, I think what it's telling us is they're winning on a play-to-play level at a really high rate. They're winning early on those pass rushes. And maybe I think they are not performing in what I would think of as like the second half of the pass rush. Like actually, I think that actually finishing the sack is a skill in and of itself. And so, yeah, maybe you have guys like Lawrence and Clowney who don't do that, and they would be better if they could, if they did get those sacks. But it's just because they don't get the sacks doesn't mean they're not super valuable. There's lots of evidence that we know of besides, or like, it's obvious, right? If you generate pressure, you're going to get better results on defense, but the numbers bear that out too. And so if you have a guy like Clowney, you have a guy like Lawrence who are able to get those pass rush wins, that helps the defense.
Absolutely. And I think I always go back to when I'm fighting the, I love DeMarcus Lawrence, one of my favorite players, you know, to watch. But my thing too is, you know, it's not his fault that the quarterback gets the ball out 0.2 seconds before he sacks him. You know, like that's the other part of the equation where the tape then comes into it when we give these guys grades or we're talking about who's successful, who's not, is we're not taking that pass rush win rate and going, this player is great, this player sucks, because there's so much more to it. You know, it's watching the tape and going, okay, yeah, he won on that pass rush, but Tom Brady got the ball off in 1.6 seconds. Like there's nothing he could have done different there, but he won his rep. And I think that that's just the great divide that I don't understand how people can't use the analytics, use these metrics and use the tape and go, these players are, you know, we can use this to say who's efficient on a snap to snap basis and how we can plan for this to end up working out better in the long run with more of a larger sample size.
I agree though. On a like given snap, you know, maybe I think there's lots of times when you can say like, hey, he won that, there's nothing he could have done.
Right.
But for when it becomes systematic for some of these guys where their sack numbers don't reflect, I think that we can probably guess that there is something they're not doing. And I'm not skilled enough to tell you what exactly that is, but you're right. I mean, like the quarterbacks, that is the total other side of it. And I think how well a quarterback is able to get the ball out or just feel when pressure is coming to get rid of the ball or move within the pocket to avoid the sack, like that is very much a quarterback skill. We know that quarterbacks drive their sack rates a lot. And so I think that is a big thing that is often missed. Quarterbacks play such a central role in sack production.
So before we get to the hot topic in Cowboys country right now, I wanted to stay on the pass rushers. You know, Michael Parsons is a guy who has the sacks. He has the pass rush win rates. Like, I mean, I know the chart you guys posted after the Giants game, he was in a stratosphere of his own, you know, is seeing a decent amount of double teams, but also winning on pass rushes. And I mean, I just want to get your thoughts on Micah Parsons and can he, I mean, cause that was a thing coming into year two of him, is it was like, okay, he was absolutely phenomenal in year one, but can he back that up in year two? And so far he has, but is, you know, as a career outlook thing is, do you think this is something that he can continue to do because he's proven through these first, 20 games that he can?
Yeah. I mean, to me, he's like truly special talent. How could you not? I mean, he led the league in pass rush win rate last year. I think there are some advantage, like you have some circumstantial advantages that helped him. When you're a blitzing linebacker, that's easier to get a win sometimes. And that's not to say he was always doing that, but he's doing that more than your standard edge rusher, obviously. But still, like, tremendous production there. And then this year, yeah, comes out of the gates just like unbelievable. I mean, we had a stat. He posted a 50 plus percent pass rush win rate in the first two games of the year. And there's only been like five guys who have ever done that, posted back-to-back games. I was watching close for week three to see if he would do it. And then that was when he really had that kind of down week. So it wasn't close, but I think he's just been unbelievable, like truly, truly incredible. And just like what a weapon Dallas has found. He's number two. He's fallen behind Von Miller. But you know, we're talking again about a guy that was, it's in his second year, wasn't drafted as a pure edge rusher, didn't play pure edge rusher last year, and is just dominating in a way where we're, you know, in win rate, he's ahead of Myles Garrett and Nick Bosa. And it's incredible. It's incredible stuff. So yeah, I think Parsons' career outlook is unbelievable. He's incredible.
You think, based on, you know, the information you guys generate and what you see, is he the best defensive player in the NFL right now?
Yeah.
I feel like it comes between him and Aaron Donald. I mean, that's
to me, if you asked me, I would pick Donald right now. Because I mean, Donald's insane. That chart that I show for edge rushers, that's just Donald's chart forever as defensive tackle. And then if you smush them together, like, you have to understand that like Donald's circumstances are just totally different from an edge rusher. He's getting doubled probably, you know, 2.5 times like what even like Myles Garrett, who gets doubled a lot, he's just like, let me put it this way. We've had pass rush win rate for five seasons. Aaron Donald, no one's best season at defensive tackle has been as good as Aaron Donald's worst season at defensive tackle in that span. That's insane. Like, that's truly nuts. He actually is like, it's week, you know, only week four. He just actually fell behind Chris Jones in pass rush win rate, which is almost notable. You know, it's like notable, like, oh my God, he's not number one. You just can't see, like, that kind of consistency is absurd. And one of the reasons why it blows my mind so much is, like, what I like about these metrics is they're not perfect. I would tell you that always, but what they are is consistent and objective.
Right.
The model doesn't know who Aaron Donald is. It doesn't know about his defensive player of the years or all pros. It doesn't know that he's a future Hall of Famer, a special, like, whatever. It just knows that dot number 99 gets past his man more than anybody else. And that's true every snap. He doesn't get any superstar benefit of the doubt. And yet every single year he blows everyone else away. And so to me, that's so amazing. You just, like, when you just don't see consistency in football statistics that way. So yeah, I would choose Donald right now. But I'm just trying to like rack my brain here, make sure I'm not, but yeah, I would choose Parsons second.
And that, I mean, can we just, like, you can make the argument Aaron Donald's the most disruptive defensive player to ever play. You know, you can make the argument. I'm not saying he is, but you can make that argument. Mm-hmm. And we're 20 games into Micah Parsons and he's in the conversation. So I think that speaks to itself as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's ridiculous. I actually, like, you know, what's funny is, like, with NFL players, and I don't know what you call it, like the hype cycle or something. Like, when young players are elite, we actually don't put them in the upper tier fast enough, I think.
Right.
Like, Justin Jefferson's rookie season was insane. And right. yet, you know, there's the kind of like holding back, I think, where you need to, and it's like, no, no, no. When players are truly remarkable, like throw them up there. And we're slow on the other end too. Like, you know, when players decline, you know, we don't talk about that as quickly enough. But yeah, I actually think it's funny, like in our, you know, where we think about everyone like always jumping to conclusions or hyperbole. But I do think that a lot of times you get rookies or something who, or rookies or second year players who are just unbelievable. And it takes until their third or fourth year before they're considered like, oh, the best at their position or something like that, when it really happens earlier.
Gotcha. So one more question on these pass rushers and then we'll move on. We talked about DeMarcus Lawrence, talking about Michael Parsons. Dorrance Armstrong, I know, is high on you guys' list as well as far as pass rush win rate. I don't really want to talk about Dorrance Armstrong because I think he, you know, he's been a good player and really like what he's been doing this year. How much, and this is more a question for you guys, the system and the way you guys do things, but how much does a guy like Dan Quinn and the way he schemes up some of these pressures and rushes, how much does that help a guy like Dorrance Armstrong where you know, the way he kind of sends some exotic looks pre-snap and it changes, you know, it allows guys in better positions to win off the ball quicker, I guess is my question. Is there an influence from these coordinators that can help these guys that will make them look maybe a little bit better in your guys' model than they really are?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's a lot of I think there are a lot of schematic factors that are play a role right. in someone's win rate. So like one gap teams versus two gap teams. Like I think because win rates are so focused on the early part of the pass rush, being in a one gap system is better, or like quote unquote better, it helps your win rate more. If you are in a team that stunts a lot, like New Orleans, I think that hurts you because it's slower. So like it might be effective, but you're just not going to win as quickly. And then if you're in a situation where you're with a team that's doing a lot of exotic blitzes, I think that generally is going to help you because more pass rushers just means right fewer double teams, more confusion. You're just it's just going to help. So teams that blitz a lot in general, actually, regardless, it does help. So I think we've talked for a long time about maybe we do some sort of like adjusted pass rush win rate where we try and control for some of those factors. And one day maybe, you know, hopefully we'll get to it. But I think that all those circumstances do matter. And also, by the way, playing with other good players helps too. Like, it certainly does. I think it definitely helps from a sack perspective, but I think it helps from a win rate perspective too, because you're just getting less attention. And so maybe the doubles helps correct for that. You know, if you're controlling for double teams, it helps correct for that. But yeah, I think there are definitely schematic factors that can matter.
The one play I was thinking of when I asked that question was the Micah sack against Lyle Collins against the Bengals in week two. It just unblocked off the edge, but he was lined up like right over him. And the way they had stacked the A, you know, the A and the B gap, he's kind of Lyle slid down to kind of double DeMarcus Lawrence, I think it was at the time. And Micah was like, yeah, this is going to be the easiest sack of my life. So it's just, you know, again, that goes in as a quick win for him, but you know,
actually, again, you know what? I always get this one backwards. I believe if you're unblocked, you don't get a win.
Okay.
I believe what happens is you get the team gets a win because
for their overall. Because it's
like,
rush
well, I like that because I could be absolutely have this backwards, but one of them you don't get a win and one you do. I think it's team gets a win, and the thinking being that
you might scheme
things up. Like, right. We looked at it once and like Wink Martindale's defenses always had the most unblocked guys. And so it's like, okay, yeah, that is credit to the defense. But I don't think the pass rusher themselves gets a win.
That makes sense to me. I feel like the way you described it makes the most sense.
Okay, good. Nice. Now I'm not sure. Now I'm kind of tempted to like go find that play and see if, Parsons got to win, but anyway, I think that is how it works, if I recall.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries.
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on, and there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again, and I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So I want you to tell me if I'm wrong here, but I'm like when I go into ESPN analytics and I'm looking at the pass rush win rate, the pass block win rate, all that stuff, I seem to dive more into that stuff than the quarterback analytics, because I think quarterback stuff is just so much based on play calling, you know, weapons around you, circumstances, all of that. Let's talk about some Cooper Rush and Dak Prescott. Okay. This has been, obviously Cooper Rush 4-0 in his four starts. He's 3-0 this season. There's been a ton of people who want Cooper Rush to be the new starting quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. We've seen some stuff this week from you know, other sites and other, you know, metrics who are going to kind of give you a better idea that, hey, the Cowboys are winning games, but it's not totally because of the offense. That's not to take anything away from Cooper Rush and the offense, because I think they've been a lot better than they were in week one when they played a powerhouse in Tampa Bay. But I just wanted to get your thoughts from an analytical and metric perspective on what you kind of see at the quarterback spot from Cooper Rush and what your thoughts are going forward with the quarterback controversy, as Jerry Jones would say.
Okay, well, I guess at the top, I would not bench Dak Prescott for Cooper Rush.
All right, you can stay on the podcast for the rest of the episode. I don't have to take you off.
Okay. So, you know, last week, Dominique Foxworth had this kind of like galaxy brain take on Dallas that, like, because Prescott is better than Rush, or Rush is worse than Prescott, and they know they have to do these things to help him, that they end up, like, pulling these levers that are actually very helpful. And so the offense has been better. And I was like, that's kind of wild, but like maybe not that crazy. And I did look at, and I think we have some ability to look at what I like to call, yeah, like levers. And I think what's interesting is I'm going to go from the back to the, to start of 2021 to now. This is based on which quarterback started the game. Dak Prescott play. These are not like dramatic changes, but I think there's not nothing here. Dak Prescott, 23.6% play action. Cooper Rush, 29.2% play action. You know, it's an offensive advantage. You should more is better. Design rollouts, Dak Prescott 6%, Cooper Rush 8%. Another one that, if you can, depending on your offense, if you can work in design rollouts, like they perform better.
Right.
And then one more here, dropbacks versus 8 in the box. So Prescott 6%, Rush 11%. Idea being that, right, like if you're getting 8 in the box, it's obviously easier for you to pass against. The numbers bear that out as well. Some of that I would need to like really dive into, like personnel stuff. You know, are they stacking 8 in the box when you're not running like 21 personnel or something. But either way, like all of those numbers do, I think, lend some credence to that thought. Like, I don't think that that's like that crazy.
I guess, and that's, I mean, part of that too, like people bring that up all the time. Well, the offense looks different. Like it looks better. And I'm like, well, don't get mad at Dak because the play caller does things different when he has, like, that's not a talent thing. That's not a decision-making thing. That's, hey, we're making it easier on a guy with less. And if that is the case, like if Kellen Moore's going, hey, we got to do things different because Cooper Rush is in now, that should be a in-house conversation of going, why aren't we doing these things to help out our better quarterback?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Like when you have these sort of like tools, and I know this is talking about play calling in a kind of basic level, but like ultimately like those things like play action, like design rollouts, and maybe it's, you know, last year, Prescott coming off the injury, you know, how many design rollouts do they want to do? Or I bet they should, because those actually, like, you're less likely to take a sack on those plays. Like those things help, regardless of who you are. And so, yeah, I do think like maybe there's something there, but also like more broadly too, when we have a really long history of Dak Prescott being a very productive, good quarterback. And we have a very short history of Cooper Rush doing it. I mean, he's totally blown away my expectations. Like I did a hit on Daily Wager ahead of his first start, where we were fading the Cowboys. We had Dallas with Cooper Rush as like one of the worst teams in the league. Which I don't think is like crazy at the time, right?
No.
You know, just like, I mean, if you were going into the season with Cooper Rush as your quarterback before this year, you'd be like, well, yeah, I mean, that team's gonna suck. But I think so, yeah, where we were I was talking about how it was like, you know, they're not just going with their backup quarterback, it's a bad backup quarterback, and how, but he's blown away. I mean, fourth in QBR. How can you, you know,
right?
Can gotta give him credit.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like I said, I think there is some credence to that theory that, hey, why are they doing some things easier and, you know, doing some things different with one guy compared to the other? And I think you can just, like you said, the rollouts, just the way that they're scheming the guys open. I mean, I know CeeDee Lamb week one, he had no, you know, his separation metrics and analytics weren't great at all. And then weeks 2, 3, 4, he was doing more stuff in the middle of the field, running more drags, running more stuff that's just an easier way for you to get open. And I know I saw you guys posted something pretty, it was either you or ESPN where I saw that they put it out that he's like the 7th or 8th most his separating rating or his
open.
Let
me pull
rating.
It up. So it's a open score. So it's our new, so this is one of our brand new metrics. We just launched this last week. And if you think about it like this, actually, so separation is kind of a nice thing, but it's always been a sort of deeply flawed.
Right.
I've never used it really or relied heavily on it to like determine openness, because I mean, just think of it. If I'm running a go route and you're the corner and I'm running at you and we have 1 yard of separation, am I open? Well, I mean, that depends. Are you in front of me or behind me? If you're in front of me, then I'm not open at all. If you are 1 yard behind me, I am wide open. So like, just before we talk about anything else, like direction of that separation matters so much. So open score, my colleague, Brian Burke, who's like one of the, you know, who's like godfather of football analytics. Like he's been in the lab working on this for a long time, wanting to quantify a receiver's ability to get open. And so he's looking at all the things, it's controlling for factors like the route you're running, the coverage that the receiver's that the defense is playing, right? Leverage, so that kind of like direction. If the ball is under, the ball is under overthrown. So like if you are going deep and the ball's underthrown, then at the ball arrival, won't look like you're open, but the ball is underthrown. We're also looking at openness earlier in the play as well. So at throw, and that allows us to quantify openness on untargeted plays, which I think to me is a crucial element of this. Like, you can't just look at targeted plays, because there's all sorts of like selection bias there. Like, if you're one really good receiver on a team, then the quarterback's just force feeding you the ball. Well, that's not your fault. Like, right. And so, we have this new metric, open score. It's on a 0 to 99 scale. I'm pulling up the wrong year, but hang on. So we've got Lamb 9th right now in open score, and it's early. You know, it's a stat that needs like a healthy sample, really. But yeah, 4 weeks in, we've got Lamb 9th with a 74. That's really strong. He's a really low catch score, which is, I think all Cowboy fans will realize why, because of that.
Yeah, that drop.
But I wouldn't be super worried about that going forward.
What is there a way for you guys to do that week by week, or is it lump it in? Like, can you pull up that open score from week one only?
No. I don't have an ability to right now, and we also don't want to. So, like, it's way too noisy of a metric to
play with it that much.
On a game by game level.
Right.
And so we really want to encourage, season level usage. In fact, when we rolled it out, we were using a lot of 21 plus 22 numbers so that we could get that sample. You're just going to get a lot of kind of wild numbers. Though, to be honest with you, like, if you look at the top 10 open score right now, which I tweeted it, there's only two like sort of bizarre names in there, and that's Zay Jones and Ashton Doolin. And I don't even know if they're that bizarre. Like, you know, I mean, like, Zay Jones is playing really well. I think that's right. That's just true. I guess surprising names. But in any given game, you're going to get wild results. And I think that's actually like true for a lot of metrics, and something, having spent a lot of time looking at like pass block win rate or whatever, like, linemen have bad games, just like a quarterback does, just like a receiver does. And it's like, you know, yeah, there might be a game where Zach Martin has like a bad pass block win rate, and that, like, that just me, you know, it's just because it happens, just because he had a bad day at the office, just like every other position. But we don't tend to like focus in on that for positions that aren't like quarterback or receiver or corner or something.
You took it there, and that's where I was going to go next. But this offensive line's played a lot better than I think. You know, week one, it did not look good. It was rough. And then weeks 2 through 4, I mean, it looks like they kind of got their stuff together, and they didn't play Tampa Bay. I think that's also a very bright point we need to point out, is that Tampa Bay's defense is really, really good. And some of those other teams that we played aren't quite on that level. But from a pass block and run block win rate perspective, where do you guys currently have Dallas's line? And do you have any thoughts on where they are going forward?
Yeah, we don't like Dallas's line, or our numbers don't. This is one that
really?
I think has been, this is one that's been quite, I think, different than reputation. So we have Dallas, and this is all four games, but we have Dallas 30th in pass block win rate, which I think is a shock, 8th in run block win rate. And I think Tyler Smith is maybe a person that it is like a pivot point there, because pass block win rate, we have him 63rd out of 65 tackles. And I know that the dialogue's been pretty positive on him. Now, I haven't gone through and watched his losses or anything like that. So I don't know exactly, but now we're high on him from a run block perspective, but
which is kind of what he was coming into the season. It was like, he might struggle as a pass protector, but he should be a really good run blocker.
Right. So, you know, like I said, I haven't watched them to go through, but I think that is interesting, because I think you tell me if I'm wrong, but I think the conversation around him has been like pretty positive.
It has. And I think some of that, and I'm not trying to take shots at Tyler Smith, like, he's been a lot better than I thought he would be. Mm-hmm. Because when he drafted, I was like, there's no way he'll be able to be a left tackle. I said, in 3 years, he might be able to start working in, but I was like, he's a left guard only. And I think that if you play him at left tackle, he's going to be a disaster. And he hasn't been that, but I think that was kind of the discourse before the season. And he's exceeded those expectations. So people go, oh, okay, it's not terrible. But like every game, I'm like, oh, Tyler Smith grew, you know, he's doing really good things, but he still has a lot of things to clean up. Like that's been like my way of approaching it, because I thought he was going to be god awful, and he hasn't been god awful. He's just, he's still got areas to improve on, things to clean up. And I think, like you said, like a lot of people right now are, oh, this guy is, if Tyron Smith comes back, do we not put Tyron Smith back in the rotation? I kind of like roll my eyes at that, because I'm like, if Tyron Smith healthy, he's still a much better left tackle than Tyler Smith.
Yeah, I would I would agree. I think it's, you know, Dallas has done a nice job of avoiding sacks, you know, or Cooper Rush has done a nice job of avoiding sacks. And like we kind of talked about at the beginning, like those are not always the same thing. And I would, if I were, you know, I would want to go through and watch to like really dive in. But I think there really is, I think about like Trevor Lawrence in Jacksonville. Actually, even last year, Trevor Lawrence was really good at sack avoidance, but that line is, that's a bad line. And right. Until this past week, Lawrence had not taken a lot of sacks. And I don't think that's really a credit to that offensive line. Like Cam Rob, I said, Tyler Smith, 63rd in pass block win rate. Cam Robbins is 64th. So, and actually there's a huge gap between them. Like a huge gap now that I see it. So at least the two tackles below Tyler Smith are way below me. now that I'm looking at it. But yeah, I think so. Just because Rush has not taken a ton of sacks, I don't think that's probably partially an offensive line testament, but I think there's a lot of things that go into that. And
I know his time to throw has been very good from where, right. You know, he's getting the ball out quick. So like I said, that kind of what we talked about.
Yeah.
What was that?
I don't have it in front of me, but I believe you.
Yeah, no. I mean, just from what I've kind of been reading and what I've seen, it's, you know, it seems like he's kind of what we talked about at the beginning, is like you can win initially, you can beat Tyler Smith, but if the ball's coming out half a second before you get to him, a lot of people casually watching football are going to go, hey, that was a good play. Not, oh, he lost that rep, you know? So,
right. And that, by the way, is also often where a disconnect with pass block win rate and general reputation comes in, because when you do that, if you get rid of the ball in 2.2 seconds, we don't give the offensive line any credit on that play. You have to sustain your block for 2.5 seconds to earn a win. And that's, I think the thing that happens is people look at pressure numbers, pressure rates, and sack rates, and both of those things are highly dependent on time to throw. And so actually we had this situation with Tampa last year, really, where our numbers said Tristan Wirfs was good, but that the offensive line as a whole was sort of mediocre. Now Brady took really low, you know, took sacks at a really low rate, had his pressure at a really low rate, like he's done basically his entire career, but he was getting the ball out super fast too. And so it was like that's just because that Brady's maintaining that doesn't mean that Tampa's offensive line has been awesome. And so I think there is some of that potentially going on here.
Gotcha. Cool, man. It's not really a question, but it is, just to get you out of here. I was going to let you close it off with, can you give us, from your standpoint, like a metric or something like that you guys have been looking at that goes, okay, this team might be a lot better going forward than we thought it would be. And then one that goes, hey, maybe we need to pump the brakes on the Cowboys, you know, possibly still being a legit playoff contender. And there's something that really buys into them, you know, making a run. And then is there something from you guys' standpoint where you go, hey, I don't, you know, maybe this is a lot more luck and bad teams than it is successful consistency and something you can sustain going forward?
Good question.
We didn't play them.
At the top of the show, I would have said their pass block win rate as a team, to me, I would consider to be like definitely troubling. Like, I think, I think that's going to be,
I feel like this could be the same answer. It could be pass block win rate on offense and then pass rush win rate on defense.
Right. Exactly.
You got three guys in the top 10. And
I mean, yeah, Rams and Eagles coming up is a test for that offensive line. So I think I'll be really curious to see especially Eagles, you know. Well, Rams is interesting from an interior standpoint, of course, but I'll be really interested to see how Dallas's offensive line holds up in the next two games here. I think that'll be key. What makes them, I mean, yeah, I do think it is their passers. I mean, their defense has been good still. I think, like, my concern going into the year was they were turnover dependent defense last year, right, and that they would probably be like pretty good, but not elite. And they've been good. So, especially in pass defense. So, which is where you want to be, your strength to be. So yeah, I do think it is pass rush though. I do think that is the Parsons is like your secret weapon. Like, you can always, he can totally disrupt a game in a way that can keep Dallas in a game that they might not have otherwise been able to hang in. So to me, I do think that is the reason for optimism.
Yep. I agree. Do you guys do much stuff with corners?
So we do, I use some next gen stats. I think that, like, what I just described for receivers,
right,
we would love to sort of do the inverse, right, with corners, but it's more complicated. Or really going up, Brian, my colleague, telling us that it's more complicated. I do, yeah, we do though. You know, I do certainly think there's value in some of the nearest defender metrics from NFL Next Gen Stats, and you know, you can look at corners a variety of ways. Like, when people ask me what's one number to look at for a corner, right, if I can only choose one, I would go with yards per coverage snap, or maybe EPA per coverage snap, probably. And because it's just like, you have to, if you're not measuring a corner by, you have to account for the unseen, the non-target, basically. Right. And so I do think it's really interesting when you look at these corners who can achieve like a low yards per coverage snap number in different ways. Like, you have a guy like Casey Hayward, who often like just deters targets. He doesn't get targeted very often. And then you have other people like an AJ Terrell, who are excellent at, when they are targeted, at preventing the, you're going to ask about Diggs, right? That's what I'm like trying to pull it up as I,
yeah, I was going to see, Rick, just again, like, the whole theme of this team is very interesting, because the Trayvon Diggs discourse coming into the year was, some people thought he was terrible, some people thought he was a Hall of Famer. And I think he probably fits somewhere in between, but I, you know, based on some of the metrics and stuff like that, I figured he probably look a little bit better this year. You know, he's got two interceptions, so I think he's tied for first with picks, but I feel like the coverage, the separation isn't as bad as it was years past. Like, I feel like he's cleaned that, you know, yards per covered, you know, yards per target, all that we just mentioned. I feel like that's been cleaned up. So I was curious where you had him before we got you out of here.
Yeah, so he's at 1.3 yards per coverage snap allowed this season, which is, he was at 1.5 last year. So that is an improvement. 1.3 is like, I think that's kind of, I'm looking at, it's sort of ballparky average for like a starting outside corner. But you can't really talk about Diggs in a yards per coverage snap way alone, because of the value that he generates through interceptions, which you're not rewarded there. So that's why I would, and I don't have easy access to EPA per coverage snap, so it would take me a minute. But that's why I would tend to lean on that. Like, his targeted EPA, according to NFL Next Gen Stats, is not special this year, so I don't think it would actually help him out like a ton. But I think, like, the answer, my best guess is kind of what you said. Like, I don't think he's like a first team all pro level corner, but I think he's good. So there is a trade-off with interceptions and completions, and it can definitely be worth it. Like, turnovers are super important. So right. He's an interesting player. I think that that's like, yeah, to evaluate some that we need to do more work on evaluating defensive backs quantitatively is like what I always say. You know, I use these metrics a lot, and I think there's value in them, but I think that you have to go into evaluating these players with our current suite of metrics and to with the understanding that like there is a lot of room to grow here.
Awesome. Seth, I kept you a little long, but this is great. Fantastic. Like I said, it's been an interesting season for the Cowboys. It was over in week one. It's back in week four, hoping we can carry that, you know, hot wave going into week five. And I figured you'd have some numbers and some things for us that the casual fan, the people who listen to this podcast might not think about or know about or even understand. But like I said, the way you kind of describe it and the way you guys, you know, show it on Twitter and ESPN, I think it's just something that every fan should learn about and learn to use and take that with everything else and form strong, educated opinions. So I was glad to have you on to do some of this with us today.
Cool. Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, man. This was great. Like I said, we'll keep following your work. Let everybody know real quick where they can find, I mean, I know you're on Twitter and all that, but let everybody know where they can find your work and where they can hear you talk and all that as well.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Seth Walder. You know, when I write, that's usually on, or that's always on ESPN.com. I do some sports betting stuff on Daily Wager on Fridays. So check it out.
Cool, man. I appreciate it, man. This was a lot of fun. This was the Talking the Star podcast. We'll see you guys next week. Thanks again.